Welcome to the RotoWire Prospect Podcast. I'm Clay Link here with RotoWire.com's lead prospect analyst, James Anderson. James, great to be talking with you as always. Minor league baseball is back, so we got a lot to touch on. It's been a long, you know, almost 2 years. But we do have minor league baseball back, so we'll talk about some notable assignments to minor league affiliates. I know you have a road trip to Cincinnati, or not to Cincinnati, but to Ohio coming up. That's all I'll say on that front. But I will say, too, that you need to celebrate at your neighborhood skyline, Chili. But, yeah, first, have you ever been to Ohio? You're driven through there before?
Yeah, I've been there plenty, mostly driving through. But also I went to Cleveland one time to go to a ball game back in the early 2000s.
Very nice. I don't imagine you'll get over to Great American Ballpark, but it's nope. Okay. But safe travels, man. I know, you know, no Saturday show for you and I then this week, but still doing Farm Friday. So look forward to that. And yeah, as I mentioned, lots of touch on. We'll also be drafting our walk-up songs. I may have another repeat, I have to be honest, from the Commercial Jams playlist, but that's not so bad. But yeah, let's get into some of these notable assignments. And well, first, yesterday, did anything catch your eye in particular? I saw Wander had a couple hits, but anything on the first day of action that you saw?
You know, I think there's a lot of buzz about Michael Harris having a big night. He was sent to high A as a 20-year-old, so that's encouraging. He's off to a good start. One thing that kind of caught my eye, I mean, that didn't necessarily surprise me, but I think it's worth mentioning for Dynasty and for Redraft, is Jackson Cower had a stellar debut at AAA. So I would just keep an eye on Cower. I mean, I know Daniel Lynch didn't look, I mean, the command was an issue in his debut, but I actually think Cower might be able to find more immediate success if and when he does get the call for Kansas City. And, you know, I think his upside gets slept on by a lot of people. I think he's got a really, really high ceiling if he can put it all together. So it was good to see Cower get off to a nice start.
Very nice. Yeah, I had my eyes on Lynch for a little bit on Monday, and I was watching McClanahan's second start yesterday. That kid is impressive, man. And yeah, it didn't go – I think he went like 65 pitches after throwing 59 in his first start of the season. And I mean, they have a pretty good thing going there with that Luis Patino piggyback situation. But I would love to see Shane McClanahan stretch up just a little bit more. 80, 85 pitches, I feel like he could factor into quite a few decisions. But right now, it's, you know, if he's opening and going forward, it's not the most fantasy-friendly role. But I love Shane McClanahan's stuff. It is off the charts. And I got to say, too, watching that game, you know, I have a ton of respect for Albert Pujols, what he's done. I mean, I've probably seen in my lifetime a more consistent hitter. But that guy being on the field every day for the team really does a disservice to two of the great talents in the entire world, and Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani. So, you know, I was just watching him yesterday. There was a weird play between first and second where David Fletcher and Pujols were, you know, kind of just had a miscommunication. Neither of them got to the ball. But you know, the guy's been below replacement level by F4 for four straight years. So I know this is a prospect pod, but I couldn't help but think, man, they're really – Albert Pujols really doesn't have any business being on the field every day. But, James, back to the minor leagues. We'll go to the other end of the spectrum from Albert Pujols. Bobby Witt at AA, does that ring as a vote of confidence for you? I mean, do you expect this?
I think Bobby Witt and CJ Abrams both heading to AA is – pretty much what I would have expected, but still good to see. I mean, you definitely saw some teams take a very, very cautious approach with where they sent guys, and the Royals and the Padres. I mean, both those guys are 20. They're both top five overall prospects, and they're both going to get a nice little challenge at AA. And I think that that's sort of the perfect spot to send them, because they both have the talent to really – hit the ground running there, but they're also going to get challenged by a lot of good pitching. And, you know, it would have been a shame to see either of them head to high A. I think a lot of teams probably would have played it safe and sent CJ Abrams maybe to high A, but the Padres never do that. They're always pushing their guys, and definitely not a surprise to see Witt head to double A after his big spring.
Yeah, that's good to see. I would hope to see Witt sometime this year, but I totally get that given his prior experience was a rookie ball, right? He had never played at a full season affiliate before this year. Am I correct on that, Bobby? Yep. Yeah, so that is definitely a good sign. Now, I've kind of waxed poetic on Alek Manoah lately. Nate Pearson getting a lot of the attention right now, and deservedly so. But I do think Pearson or Alek Manoah is a guy to maybe stash if you can stash minor leaguers and you have the bench space. Does Manoah getting assigned to AAA indicate anything important to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you could make a case that of the top earlier today I was updating all the – just making sure that everyone in the top 400 was assigned to the right level. So when you go to the top 400, it'll show which level a guy's at. And so I was just kind of sweeping that and making sure everyone is at the right level. And I'll have an article coming out on that later today. But really, I think you could make a case that just of everyone on the top 400 – Manoah might have gotten the biggest ringing endorsement from his team by getting assigned to AAA, considering his prior experience. I mean, same thing with Bobby Witt. He'd never pitched in a full season league. And, you know, I think a lot of teams would have just played it safe and sent him to AA. Simeon Woods Richardson, for instance, his org mate got sent to AA, and Woods Richardson has much more experience than Manoah and is pretty advanced in his own right. So the fact that they bumped Manoah ahead of Simeon really kind of tells us that Manoah is going to get to the big leagues first out of those two. And, you know, Nate Pearson is great as well, but I mean, there's probably room at some point this season. There should be room in that rotation for both of those guys, but this is going to be a big test for Manoah. I mean, he's going to be going up against a lot of journeyman quad A types who've been around that level for a while. And, you know, it's going to be something that if he handles that test, you got to imagine that he could be in the majors, you know, in a matter of weeks. I saw some quotes coming out of Toronto. They're very tight-lipped about this type of thing. Like, they're definitely not going to say, like, yeah, we think he could be up, like, soon or anything like that. But they also didn't say, oh, we just want Manoah to have, like, a nice long run at AAA. Like, they didn't rule it out either. And I think if they wanted to sort of slow play his ascent, it would have been easy to just send him to AA. So I thought that Manoah going to AAA was probably the biggest headline in terms of assignments for top prospects.
Talking noteworthy minor league assignments to start the 2021 season. And James, you mentioned before we started that you're going to have a follow-up article coming of this.
Right. Well, it's not going to be, we're basically working off of that article for this podcast. Mm-hmm. And then after the pod goes up, the article will go up.
Okay, cool. I just wanted to note that, so people definitely check that out after listening to the show. Max Meyer, the number 3 overall pick in 2020, I know you've liked quite a bit since he came into affiliated ball. Now, he was with the major league team this spring, but they did not want him in game action. So there was an interesting report from Jordan McPherson of the Miami Herald. A report quote from Don Mattingly, quote, "We don't want Max coming over to a game and trying to throw 100. We want him to get game ready to pitch this season, continue his development. We think there's a real risk with those guys kind of trying to impress and doing too much early. It's a danger in camp, and that's something we're going to stay away from." So they kind of kid-gloved him in camp, but a double-A assignment indicates they think he's ready for a pretty big challenge.
Yeah, and you could just kind of compare that assignment to people talk about Asa Lacy and Emerson Hancock, and I would throw Cade Cavalli in there certainly, and Slade Ciccone as well, in terms of just the best college pitchers from last year's draft. Most of those guys, actually all those guys, Ciccone's injured right now, but the other three, Lacy, Hancock, Cavalli, they're all opening at high A. Reed Detmers is opening at double A, but Detmers was sort of seen as the guy who was going to be quickest to the majors from that crop anyway. So him going to double A was kind of par for the course. But Meyer getting that bump up, it is a pretty big vote of confidence when you kind of compare him to his classmates and where they got assigned. And I don't think he's not a guy to stash right now, but I think him going to double A, you know, I think the stage is set for him to really break out this year, and he could certainly spend a good chunk of the season at triple A if all goes well. And at the very least, he should be in the rotation mix for 2022 if he can stay healthy.
Yeah, that's they've done a good job drafting and developing those arms, and Max Meyer maybe the next one to come. Now, James, we talked a little bit about how Luis Angel Acuña, given the name brand value, maybe a sell in dynasty leagues. How, look, he's not his brother, good talent, but maybe because of the last name, the bar's set unrealistically high for Luis Angel. Low A assignment, what does that say to you about how Texas is feeling about the younger, but not, is it the middle Acuña? Not the youngest, right?
Yeah, he's not the youngest.
He's the middle.
Brian Acuña, I think, is the third one. He'll be on the way soon. I think it's sort of swung the other way in dynasty leagues, where it's kind of become in vogue to, say that Acuña is overrated and Acuña is just getting by on his last name and stuff like that, and pointing out the extremely obvious fact that he's not Ronald Acuña, the best player in the game, arguably. So I think there's just a lot of sort of backlash to the hype. And I think it maybe he's a buy low, honestly. Like, I think there's a lot of people that are kind of running away from Acuña because everyone is correctly pointing out obvious facts about him. But, you know, they wouldn't have sent him to low A if they didn't like the player. He's 19. This is the same assignment that the best guys from that signing class got. Like, this is where Luis Matos is headed. He's going to low A. So, you know, there's other guys from this class. Misael Urbina, he's not even assigned to a full season league. So, I think that Acuña's a legitimate prospect. Like, he's not a slam dunk top 100 prospect, and he's certainly not his big brother, but I think just writing him off as just some guy who's getting by on his last name oversells the fact that, I mean, this is still a very legitimate prospect.
Yeah, it does seem like people kind of want to shoot him down because it is so easy to compare him to his brother, and it's not going to be that. But a good talent in his own right and a good prospect. So, that Rangers team, man, I mean, they're not the Tigers, but it just looks like there's a lot of opportunity for playing time in the coming years. And I think it was Chris Welsh, or our buddy Chris Welsh, who was seeing Luis Angel and Justin Foscue play recently. Yep. I forget exactly, but I just saw some of the replies like, oh, Foscue, there's one good hitter in this tweet or something. People just don't want
to. No, that's exactly into Acuña.
Yeah,
like, it's this like very in vogue thing to just be like, oh, like he's overrated. I think it's gotten to the point where now he's a little underrated because this guy still has elite bat to ball. He's got a really quick bat. He's fast. He adds some defensive versatility. He's not going to be a huge power threat at all. Like, I mean, he might be like a 15 homer guy at peak, and maybe he doesn't even get there, but he could be a leadoff hitter. he could hit ninth and just get the green light all day on the bases. I mean, he's just, it's kind of, and it's easy to pick on him too, just because of his height. Like he's obviously a lot smaller than your typical big leaguer, but that's not a complete barrier to entry. I mean, we've seen guys kind of get by, like, you know, Jose Altuve, Ozzy Albies, Nick Madrigal. Like there's plenty of really diminutive second basemen who find a way to make it work. And, you know, I'm not saying just go out and try to trade for Luis Angel Acuña in all your leagues, but, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets dropped or if you could just get him as like a throw in or something like that. I mean, he's not going to be moving out of my top 200 anytime soon.
Yeah, height doesn't measure heart, James, as Marcus Stroman likes to say. It's a classic short guy thing to say. But, yeah, I mean, that's not a death sentence by any means for a prospect, especially a second base prospect. James, what can you tell us about Brian Rocchio? Pretty young kid, right? I mean, I guess you look at him and the assignment for Rocchio was high A. Does that seem aggressive to you?
Well, I think I'm just going to hit on all of Cleveland's infielders because they have such a the big strength of Cleveland's farm system is the lower levels, and you know, especially infielders. I mean, they're oozing with infielders, and I think that resulted in a lot of guys just getting a slight bump. Brian Rocchio, Aaron Bracco, I think you could have easily assigned those guys to low A, but they both got the bump to high A. And I think that's just because the talent sort of pushes them up, because you need to create playing time for the guys in the AZL. And so you need to create playing time for the guys at low A, and then you need to push those guys up to high A to do that. And so Rocchio and Bracco are going to be tested, I think. And I have no reason to think that they won't answer the bell, but that's a legit test for those guys. I think they're both 20. Angel Martinez, he gets the bump up to low A, and he primarily played in the DSL back in 2019. So he could have easily been sent to the AZL, but they got a ton of shortstops and second basemen that need to get work in the AZL. So Martinez gets bumped up to low A. And then Bo Naylor got a big assignment to double A. And a lot of the guys that I think kind of got underassigned are catchers. And that makes sense, because that's the toughest position to learn in the minor leagues. But Bo Naylor, 21-year-old catcher, he gets a really aggressive assignment up to double A. And so that'll be worth tracking as well. I mean, Bo Naylor's on a lot of like breakout lists and everything this year. That's a no joke assignment. Like if he hits at double A, that means something, because you just don't see many catchers his age handle the upper levels. So Cleveland was definitely one of the organizations that sort of by need, like they kind of needed to be aggressive on where they sent guys because of how much talent they have in the lower levels.
Very nice, man. Well, I've been told to give a little cue here and say that we're throwing to break, and we'll splice in some words from our sponsors here. Now we're back. So James, Matthew Liberatore, I was impressed with Manoa. I was already, you know, a big fan of McClanahan in the spring, but I was really impressed with him in the spring. I did not see Liberatore in the spring, but apparently he had a pretty good one, and maybe knocking at the door. This is maybe somebody who, you know me, I'm always looking for stash candidates. Maybe he should be on the list. I mean, in our stake league, maybe I'll have to go fishing as the biggest fish in the pond. Not a shark, just a big old fish. But maybe I'll have to think about Liberatore.
I think that would be a fish move. you know, he's fine. It's just I wonder. You know, this is a big season for the Cardinals. I think that there might be kind of a need factor involved here as well. Zach Thompson also got assigned to AAA. That one was not a surprise, but Libertor, I think I would have probably said that he probably belongs maybe at AA. He could prove me wrong, but that's a guy where even if he's putting up good numbers at AAA, I'm not going to be involved in any sort of Fabapalooza involving Libertor. I just think the fastball is going to be pretty hittable. So we'll see. But to me, this one was kind of surprising, but it kind of almost reeks of a little desperation on the part of St. Louis, because I wonder how much more leash that front office has given some of their recent transactions.
There was a report from Derek Gould of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch last year that apparently multiple scouts in the organization viewed him as an elite prospect, Libertor. But the Rays just kind of dumped him who did they even get back for him when they traded him? I don't know.
That wasn't a dump. I think that's where they got Randy.
Oh, that's where they got Randy. That's right. I was just looking at his note. It said, in exchange for unnamed minor league players at the time, and then it was Randy and Jose Martinez. Mm-hmm. But anytime the Rays give up on a guy, though, I mean, at the time we didn't realize how good a Randy Rosarena could be, but that definitely did kind of knock down his value in the general baseball world, I'd say.
Like, Libertor is 100% an old-school scouting type of guy. Like, he's someone where – old school, just eye test scouts like him way, way, way more than analytically inclined teams that are measuring for spin and movement and all that stuff. So I think that kind of is the explanation there. Like, the Rays, he's just not a Rays type of pitching prospect. And the Cardinals, they use analytics, but I mean, I think they still rely plenty on traditional scouting. So. Obviously, I think it's highly unlikely at this point that we don't look back on that trade as a pretty big fleecing by Tampa Bay.
Interesting. All right. Well, the guy for San Diego, Tucipita Marcano, at AAA. So he's like just one step away, one knock at the door. Did you expect him to be at the highest minor league level right away, Marcano?
Well, this one's more kind of about just him getting to the big leagues earlier this season. Like, obviously, the fact that they thought enough of him to put him on the big league roster kind of was a foreshadowing that he might be headed to AAA at some point. But he's 21, and I definitely didn't think he would open the year in the majors. And I still think he's more of a utility player long term, but he does have speed and he does have a solid approach and solid contact skills. So if he's got a little bit more juice in the bat than I think he does, then those other tools could really play. And he might be a guy that is always eligible at multiple positions, but really more of just sort of a, wow, he reached the big leagues already. Did not see that coming. Once that happened, AAA seemed kind of inevitable.
Yeah, good speed, as you mentioned, but maybe needs to work on those instincts and reads, because 2019, he was actually caught more than he was successful. 16 caught stealing, 15 stolen bases. I had actually kind of forgotten that he was on that team. He didn't really play much, hardly at all, but he was just kind of there in Tatis's absence and just kind of hanging around as a utility guy. But interesting guy to keep an eye on. Now, Hunter Green, AA, kind of what I expected, but I think this may be something where, especially given the state of the Reds bullpen, where maybe they have to, speed up his arrival to the big leagues and get him here and move him to the bullpen. Do you know for sure what role he's filling right away at AA?
Oh, I would guess he's getting stretched out. This I worry that this could end up being one where it doesn't go very well. Double A is that's a pretty big test for a guy like Green, with given just his amount of experience over the past year or so. You know, the fastball obviously is, the velocity is elite, but Double A, you're going to be dealing with a lot of hitters that can just force you to throw some strikes and force you to fill up the zone and use your off speed pitches. And I don't know if Green's going to be able to pass that test. If he gets off to a good start at Double A, he'll be a pretty big riser on my rankings, but that's more because of how low I am on him right now. Like, you know, I think he's hopefully a really good reliever long-term. Like that, if I was holding him in Dynasty, that would be what I was hoping for. And I kind of worry that this one might fall off the rails.
Yeah, I think he's a reliever, frankly. I wish for the best. He could be a really good reliever. I just don't see him panning out as a starter, given what I've seen so far. Great fastball, but that's about it right now. Now, the assignments we've talked about so far in the minor leagues, pretty aggressive. Would you say Julio Rodriguez, the high A, more so a soft landing? Because it seems like maybe he could be ready for a greater challenge.
So I think and Jesse Roach over at BP did a good job laying this out on Twitter the other day. I think this one is basically just that they didn't want to send any of their good prospects to Arkansas. And Everett is obviously very close to Seattle, but it's also very close to Tacoma. And I wonder if when Jared Kelenic gets the call here, I wonder if Julio Rodriguez just replaces him on the Tacoma roster and just skips Arkansas altogether, because I think kind of for obvious reasons, you'd rather have him closer to Washington. And I, from a talent standpoint, I mean, he's hands down the best hitter at high A right now. And I would imagine he's just going to do all kinds of damage there in the short term. But, you know, I think one option is just that he's kind of waiting for Kelenic to get promoted and then he gets jumped over Double A and takes his spot on the Triple A roster. Another option is that Seattle's just being awful and manipulating the hell out of his service time and sending him to such a low level that they're making it kind of impossible for him to force the issue this year. Mm-hmm. by just saying like, well, you have to earn the call to Double A, that kills a month, maybe 5 weeks. And then you have to earn the call from Double A to Triple A, that kills another couple months. And then by the time he gets to Triple A, there's not enough season left for him to get to the majors. So it's going to be one of those two options. Like I think if by the end of May, if he's still at high A, then I think we can probably rule out a 2021 debut for Rodriguez.
Yeah, the Mariners should be forced to sell. I mean, that's just horrible. Your number one ranked prospect, though, Julio Rodriguez. And we had a comment in the chat just while we're on the topic of the Mariners, and you mentioned Kelenic. I mean, I don't know.
Can we
have this comment? Answer. Yeah. How much long?
Where's Kelenic? When's Kelenic going to be? Is that what the comment is?
How much longer on Kelenic is the comment? Yeah, so, I mean, didn't want to get around to his question, but I mean, we don't know.
Yeah,
soon.
I definitely don't know. I mean, if I knew, we would have led off the show with that. But just like I said a couple weeks ago, you just have to be patient with this one. They waited this long so that he could get in AAA games. So I would assume they want to see him play in more than one or two AAA games. So maybe next week we see him. But yeah, I mean, it's just something you got to be patient with.
By the way, I got the Reds game on. This is one of the rare prospect pods where I actually have the Reds game on live watching. Weird to see Billy Hamilton back in Cincinnati. And he just struck out and spiked his helmet and bat. So still the same old Billy. More notable minor league assignments here, James. Spencer Torkelson to high A, Adley Rutschman to double A, J.J. Bleday to double A. I'll say that three times fast. Helio Ramos to double A, George Kirby to high A, Simeon Woods Richardson double A. Anything there among those guys I just mentioned that you want to shout out? Well, or
I mean, I've been saying that, you know, you're not going to see Torkelson in the majors this year. And I mean, I think we knew he was heading to high A for a long time before those rosters officially got announced, but just wanted to mention him. Like, you know, you don't send a guy like that to high A with the expectation of him reaching the majors this season when you're arguably the worst team in the majors. So this is going to be a full year of minor league ball for Torkelson. He's probably, you know, you hope that he forces the issue to double A pretty soon, because he, talent wise, like pedigree wise, he, double A is sort of where you expect him to spend the bulk of the year, and maybe triple A as well. But you're not going to see Torkelson this year in all likelihood. And then Bleday, Helio Ramos, those are two guys where I think a lot of people maybe hope they would have opened the year at triple A. And same thing with Adley Rutschman, and the fact that they're going to double A. The Orioles, I think the Orioles were the most conservative organization with all their assignments. I mean, I've got a long list here of guys who were given pretty soft landing spots, and like 15, 20% of them are Orioles prospects. They were pretty much across the board assigned to one level lower than I think most teams would have sent them to. And it's just kind of more proof that this is going to be one of those really sort of painful rebuilds where they're really maximizing the amount of high picks they get. And, you know, we might not see any of these sort of really big name O's prospects, certainly anytime soon, maybe even this season. Like Adley Rutschman, I got to imagine there's a way that he could force his way up this year if he's just really raking, but you send him to double A, I just think that kind of makes it, the odds are sort of stacked against him a little bit, at least for a first half call up. We had Craig Mish on the XM show a couple weeks ago, and he predicted we wouldn't be seeing Bleday in Miami till maybe September. And this double A assignment kind of backs that up, because I know they've got a lot of guys, a lot of mouths to feed in the outfield at triple A, but if they were planning on Bleday being on the fast track to the majors, I think he would have opened at triple A. And the Giants, I mean, they're extremely well run. They know what they're doing. Obviously, I think that's clear by how some of the veteran guys they have on the roster are performing this year. But I also think they're another team where they're just not really in a hurry to start all these clocks on their elite prospects. So Ramos, I think he can hit his way to the big leagues this year, but you throw in the Mike Tauchman trade, and all of a sudden they've got a lot of mouths to feed in that outfield when healthy. So Ramos, I don't think we see him in the first half either. And kind of ditto for those pitchers, George Kirby, Simeon Woods Richardson, Grayson Rodriguez going to high A. Like, that's crazy to me. Like, Grayson Rodriguez should be a double A. DL Hall, we saw him strike out like 9 and 4 and whatever innings last night. He should probably be at triple A. So just, you know, the Orioles are really slow playing this.
Very nice. Well, before we move on, a quick word from our sponsor, Moon Baseball Road Trips. Moon Baseball Road Trips, the complete guide to all the ballparks with beer, bites, and sights nearby. Arriving just in time for the 2021 season, this brand new guide from Moon Travel Guides book is the ultimate guide to baseball. This book is as much a travel guide as it is a dive into the classic American road trip, vibrant fun, fan communities, baseball history, and of course, the 30 incredible MLB cities. 7 road trip routes with detailed itineraries. It's organized by region, so you can drive a loop through the Midwest, cruise along the West Coast, or hit the ballparks from Boston to D.C. Insider advice for visiting each ballpark. So not just how to catch a game, but tips on snagging tickets, securing the best seats, and the insider scoop on the best bars and restaurants nearby. This insider scoop comes from author and lifelong baseball fan Timothy Malcolm. He served as a senior writer and editor at Phillies Nation, written stories for the Hardball Times, and has been featured on Mets Blog and Yahoo Big League Stew. He's also hosted two baseball podcasts himself, including the Phillies Nation podcast. To write this book, Tim hit the road and explored everything from Boston to Seattle to Phoenix and the Bay, bringing the experience of the game to readers across the world. For the ultimate baseball experience this summer, order your copy of Moon Baseball Road Trips, available at online retailers, your local bookstore, or at www.moon.com. James, while we do have a lot of exciting, you know, assignments and games going on, we also have players MIA missing in action, unfortunately, and some for injury reasons, some travel issues, some guys just not turned loose yet, held back at extended spring training. So Jason Dominguez, we're going to have to wait a little while longer to see his pro debut.
Yep, I think the two sort of headliners for rookie ball are Dominguez in probably the GCL. I mean, maybe he just heads to low A in a few weeks or something like that. I'm not exactly sure how that's going to play out. But Dominguez on the AL side and Hedbert Perez on the NL side. Perez will definitely be an AZL guy, I think. So they'll sort of be headlining those circuits when they open in a little over a month. And so, yeah, that's why you're not going to be seeing any stats or any highlights of those guys. Brendan Davis, also the Cubs' top prospect, number 15 overall prospect on our rankings. He apparently got hit in the head by a pitch. I saw a report from Jim Callis, and that's why he's not playing in games yet, but he will be headed to Double A once he's over that. I mean, really hope that it's not serious, because it would seem that he probably got a concussion, I guess, if he's missing this much time. And then we talked about it on the XM show last week, but and I think probably most people have seen it by now, but Christian Robinson, I think, is still in the Bahamas trying to get some visa issues resolved, stemming from an arrest from over a year ago. And so we're still waiting on Robinson and kind of TBD when we see him this year.
Yeah, that's an odd situation. And, you know, wishing the best for him. I know he's dealing with some mental health issues. And, yeah, definitely has my sympathy there. And hope everything gets worked out, because he's a great talent and has a lot to be excited about with his future. Mentioned some injuries. Josh Young, a foot injury. Royce Lewis, of course, out with that ACL. Brandon Marsh, just to be clear, shoulder injury. Anybody else who, you know, as you're digging through our injury designations, you're like, you know,
well,
unfortunate injuries still looming?
Yeah, a few guys all on the pitching side. No surprise there. But Ethan Hankins has an elbow injury. Doesn't sound good to me. I would be bracing for the worst case scenario there. And Connor Siebold, who is kind of a sleeper arm that could help the Red Sox this year, he's dealing with elbow inflammation. I mean, all of these teams are going to just say that the injury is minor. Like 99% of the time, they're just going to say, oh, it doesn't seem that serious. He's probably going to be back soon. Anytime it's an arm and a young pitcher, I just would be prepared for a long absence. And Alexander Vizcaino, one of my favorite kind of prospects on the rise in the Yankees system, he's got a sore arm too, which is why he hasn't been assigned to an affiliate. So just worth keeping an eye on those guys. Nothing really worth hitting on other than that. I will add that for the guys who are getting assigned aggressively, it seems like this new Pirates regime is really putting the the pedal to the metal in terms of where they want to start guys out at. And Travis Swaggerty up at AAA, I mean, that they've been getting no production from some of those outfield spots. And if he gets off to a good start, I mean, I guess I wouldn't be that surprised if we saw Swaggerty sooner than later. And he's a guy with very fantasy relevant tools. So that one caught my eye. They also have a few 18-year-olds at low A, Alexander Mojica, Sergio Campana, guys that had mostly played it only in the DSL. And Jiwon Bae got assigned to double A, which I thought was pretty aggressive as well. And Quinn Priester to high A. So we might be talking about the Pirates as kind of one of these Padres type of front offices where they're just pushing guys.
Very nice. Well, the Reds just won on a walk-off against Liam Hendricks, so I'm pumped. Jesse Winker bat-flipped his single, so I'd love to see it. Hopefully some more unrest and more discord in that White Sox locker room. Let's get some more heat on TLR. By the way, William Ott, who asked the Kellen the question, also wanted to know about Bobby Witt just before we wrap things up today. Want to know, like, with the way Witt had played in spring training, do you think he's a lock to come up in the second half? I wouldn't say a lock by any means, but I'll let you take this one from here, James.
I mean, I wouldn't even rule out a first half call up for Witt, I think. Mm-hmm.
But you wouldn't say a call up this year is definite, would you?
No, I wouldn't say that for any prospect at double A. Mm-hmm. And, I think Witt, the Royals are an org where if Witt is, you know, if he's making headlines at double A here over the next couple of weeks, I mean, they're not going to keep him down all year if it's clear that he could help the big league club. So not exactly sure how it shakes out. I mean, they would need a place to play him every day. And so we'll see how their infielders are performing. I mean, he could play any number of positions. I mean, he could even play the outfield probably, but I don't think they probably want to do that. So if there's a need somewhere, third base, shortstop, second base, and he's tearing the cover off the ball, I think we'll see him as early as sometime in June, really. But if he's just kind of, you know, good, not great, not necessarily forcing their hand, then it might not be till next year.
Nice. Well, thanks for the questions, William, and thanks for the kind words about our show. James, before we get to our walk-up song graph, I just got a little YouTube exclusive here, a little picture I just found yesterday of myself with a Stone Cold Steve Austin figurine set.
Nice.
Looking like a young old man with a really loose neck. So I just wanted to share that.
That's a dope picture.
WWF Bad Bones, Steve Austin figurine set. And then finally, opinion on Nate Pearson debuting from Robert Booth. Any idea when that's coming?
Really soon. I mean,
fan to hate it. Okay, yeah, fan to hate yesterday.
Yeah.
You may have said that already, but I missed it.
It's that rotation. There's going to be a spot for him. So I would guess, I think he'll be up probably either before our next podcast or later that week. Like, I think it's going to be in short order.
Nice, man. Well, great stuff as always. Looking forward to your next article. rotowire.com/try/pod, either one, to get set up with a free 10-day trial to check out all of James's articles. James, I think you have the first pick this week.
Mm.
Do you not? With the walk-up?
Yeah. No,
I know we haven't really been doing
– Yeah,
you haven't really been doing like a snake or anything, but I'll give you first choice this week.
So this one's got – I'm going to actually go Cash Money. This one's got one of the better sort of intro beats of any song you'll ever hear. And It's also when I was asking my wife, like, what song would be her walk-up music, she said this one. So I'm going to go with Juvenile, Back That Ass Up.
Nice. I like it. I love Juvie. And I love some. I was contemplating some Cash Money, and I'm sure I'll have some Cash Money on the list before long. But that's a good one. You know, that's a banger. And I like that choice. Mine is going to be, and again, I kind of alluded to it, hinted that this might be another repeat. But I love this as an intro song. Redman and Method Man, The Rock Wilder.
Oh, hell yeah.
Just that. Like, that would be such a great little riff to walk up to. So
I used to make the... I wasn't on the high school basketball team, but I used to make the mixtape that everyone warmed up to. And
I think I did that a couple times too. I think I burned a couple CDs that they warmed up to.
It was basically De Rockweiler and a bunch of Dr. Dre, and
hell yeah.
It gave the people what they wanted.
Yeah, that's a jam. And if you've seen the video, that little like dance they're doing back and forth as they're walking up. It's just a great, great song. So that's a good one. Again, I don't want to have too many repeats from a past playlist, but that one I just couldn't help. And it came across my YouTube mix the other day, and I just had to include it.
So you were watching the White Sox game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you see this thing with Liam Hendricks like getting Ryan Bloomfield tweeted a video of it? I don't think I've seen this before, where there's like Liam Hendricks runs in from the bullpen, then he runs back like he's going back to the bullpen, and he's like clearly pissed off, and then someone tells him, nope, come back. So like
Liam Hendricks is running
around in the outfield waiting to come in.
Well, I'm seeing that from Ryan Bloomfield, but I must have missed that in the game. It's hilarious.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's
No wonder he blew the save.
I've seen too many guys getting beamed though earlier. I saw Sonny Gray looked really kind of distraught and bummed about it, but he hit our boy Andrew Vaughn right in the head.
Ugh.
Scary.
I've had multiple people have shared that video with me, that Ryan Bloomfield tweet with me here in the last like 2 minutes.
TLR, man. Just gotta have them lose some more so that the discontent grows. I mean, losing Robert hurts. Robert, I guess, but I guess they still have a winning record as of now. But we'll see. Anything else you want to mention today, James? Appreciate everything, of course. And as I mentioned, we'll be doing Farm Friday this week. But I hope you enjoy your weekend. Anything else today?
No, man. Good talking, and looking forward to Farm Friday.
Same, man. I'm going to play this little promo thing, and then we'll sign off. Thank you to everybody for joining us. Catch you next week on the RotoWire Prospect Podcast.
Try RotoWire today, free for 10 days. Get our premium tools, rankings, analysis, and breaking news alerts. No credit card required. Go to rotowire.com/try.